I'm Jesse DeGroot, the marketing representative for the Mack Hayden Theater in Chatham, New York, and you're in tune to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
New WGXC programmer Matthew O'Neill has a record release show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on September 3rd at 8 p.m. His new album is called Connection. On the bill of the record release show is Morgan O'Kane opening and Otto Hauser playing DJ during the show. Again, that's Saturday, September 3rd at 8 to 11 p.m. at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. And there'll also be a live WGXC.org web stream and a broadcast on 90.7 FM. So turn out or tune in for the Matthew O'Neill record release show, Saturday, September 3rd at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you. Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Volusia, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Diane Valden reports for the Columbia paper that in light of recent accidents, residents along Columbia County Route 7A have renewed their appeal for a lower speed limit on the stretch of road between the Copaic Hamlet and Ancrum Town Line. At the August 13th Copaic Town Board meeting, several residents talked about their experiences living along the road with many curves, blind spots, and an onslaught of lead-footed drivers. Gabrielle Tesler told the board she opposes the 55-mile-per-hour speed limit between the Copaic and West Copaic in a densely populated area where people bike, jog, walk, and children and animals cross the road. She was hit by a car on that stretch of road while riding her bike a year ago, she said. Tesler suggested that because of a recent traffic death, the State Department of Transportation, which has the power to resolve the issue, would agree to lower the speed limit. The death Tesler referred to occurred on July 31st when a car and a motorcycle collided on Route 7A at the Tamarack Road intersection. Lisa Edstrom, Tesler's neighbor, wanted to know what residents could do to, quote, pressure the state, unquote, to reduce the speed limit. Stephen Sanborn noted that the town had taken action to curb speeders in the past by posting an electronic speed limit sign and increasing the police presence. He said that helped somewhat, but the whole stretch of road still remains a problem. Supervisor Janie Mettler said last year town officials submitted a request to lower the speed limit from 55 to 40 miles per hour between the Copaic Hamlet and West Copaic. In November, the town request was denied, with the state DOT saying the circumstances did not warrant a reduction. Mettler suggested this time she write a resolution containing a specific speed reduction and include the facts instead of just submitting a standard request. The formal speed limit resolution will be presented to the town board on September 8th. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. Kenneth C. Crow II is reporting for the Times Union that the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe and the U.S. Department of Commerce Economic Development Administration have announced the tribe will receive a $857,000 federal grant to promote tourism in northern New York through job and tourism business expansion under the Oxwani Travel Program. The two-year grant is funded by the American Rescue Plan's Indigenous Communities Program. The St. Regis Mohawk Indian Territory is located in the Hogansburg area in Franklin County. Quote, our region is rich in culture and history, and this grant will allow us to continue sharing these vibrant community resources by investing in local business development and building our capacity, unquote, said James Lazor, the tribe's division director in the Office of Economic Development. The project will fund three new full-time positions under tourism to develop new cultural experiences, provide more business support to tour partners, and to engage with regional partners and the travel trade industry. St. Regis Mohawk Tribe Executive Director Tarasio Barrio said the award was the result of the tourism team's efforts to support the Aquanese business community, local artisans, and cultural resource organizations such as the Aquanese Cultural Center and the Museum and the Native North American Traveling College. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
WGXC needs you. Can you be entertaining and engaging while being informative? Are you interested in all things local? News, politics, and culture? Well, WGXC 90.7 FM is looking for people to host its morning shows, the hands-on community radio magazine show. Our hosts love having an audience, are capable of multitasking, and are slow to panic. No radio experience is necessary. We're looking for diamonds in the rough. Before taking to the airwaves, you will be thoroughly trained and then set free to create compelling radio for listeners throughout Greene and Columbia counties. For more information, contact Lynn at WGXC.org or simply send an email inquiry to apply at WGXC.org. WGXC needs you.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, August 29th. 66% of the way through the year, we got 27 days left until fall. And we've already taken some damage moisture-wise. And if we don't start seeing some serious rain, those fall colors are going to be pretty bland. Local early morning temperature range is 65 in Hunter and most areas across the mountains to 72 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 71 degrees. Today will be hot, but you know it's the humidity that will get you. Heat warnings have been issued for western New York, but around here the same safety precautions should be performed. Drink plenty of water. No kids in the car. Check on your neighbors. Drink water. Use sunscreen and light clothing to block the sun. Slow things down. Take it easy as the day gets hot. And of course, drink plenty of water. Morning clouds disappear around 8 a.m. and temperatures rise steadily to 90 degrees at 5 p.m. Dew points hanging around 69 degrees will make it feel very sticky. Those air conditioners will be buzzing into the overnight because temperatures will fall to 69 degrees. However, it will still be muggy with dew points being pretty close. Tomorrow, rain returns to the area likely around noon and getting stronger towards the evening. A high of 91 is expected at 4 p.m. Overnight, more rain and some storm activity is expected. Wednesday, some lingering low chances of rain remain and we see a high of 84. Thursday, things dry out and they really dry out with dew points in the 50s and a high mark on the mercury of 77 degrees. Hottest temperature this week is expected to be 91 and the coldest temperature we're going to see is 50 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. This week we're looking at ragweed and grasses. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:40 a.m., low tide at 11:37 a.m., high tide again at 5:17 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:46 p.m. Today's current will be strong and the river temperature will be 79 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:23 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:14 p.m. Looking way up, we see chances of light geomagnetic storms are possible as Earth moves through the wake of a passing coronal mass ejection. Solar wind speed is currently 423 kilometers per second at 9.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair in the AM radio range, but that's about it until dark. After that, all frequencies are showing fair conditions. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 79. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jane Scarpolino of New Haven, Connecticut. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Trump has cost them the House in 2018. He cost them the Senate in 2020. The House is likely to flip, but he very well could cost them a very winnable Senate majority, too.
Cook Political Report editor Jessica Taylor says the chance of a red wave in November is shrinking, as former President Donald Trump's chosen candidates create fractures in the GOP. With the overturning of Roe v. Wade and the January 6th congressional hearings, the generic congressional ballot is all but tied. Cook's outlook for the House had been a GOP gain of 20 to 30 seats, but that's now 10 to 20 seats. In the Senate, the parties appear tied with eight toss-up races. A little more than 2 months until Election Day, political analyst Bill Kristol notes President Joe Biden's approval is up slightly at about 42%. He says an unpopular president is a drag on his party.
On the other hand, voters are also capable of saying, not crazy about Biden, but let's look at the two parties that are competing for control of the Senate and the House and what their agendas are and what their leadership is. And Trump is now as much on the ballot as Biden.
Meanwhile, an Axios poll found about 60% of Republicans want Trump as their nominee in 2024. Politico reporter Andrew Desiderio says Trump is using the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago to his advantage.
That's why he was the one to make public the FBI search in the first place, right? Because he believed, and I think correctly, that this actually helps him with his base of voters.
On Friday, the Justice Department unsealed a heavily redacted search affidavit, which showed the boxes seized included confidential, secret, and top secret documents. Intelligence agencies say they are studying possible damage to national security. President Biden was asked about Trump's assertion that the documents were declassified.
I've declassified everything in the world. I'm president. I can do it all. Come on.
A federal judge is expected to appoint a special master to independently oversee a review of the material per a request from Trump's team. Some in the GOP say they're looking at suing the Biden administration over student loan forgiveness. Biden wants to erase up to $10,000 in debt for those meeting income requirements, $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. Critics say that's unfair and doesn't fix the larger problem of skyrocketing college tuition. Biden is using the 2003 HEROES Act, which gives the education secretary power to give students debt relief during a crisis. Deputy Director of the National Economic Council, Bharat Ramamurthy, says the White House will defend the plan in court.
The president was clear from the beginning that he did not want to move forward on this unless it was clear that it was legally available to him.
I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported recently on the use of advanced mathematical models for proving gerrymandering to the courts. Now, researchers are confirming what democracy advocates have long suspected. Gerrymandering is being used as a tool to keep political power in the face of a changing tide of demographics. Research at University of California, Santa Cruz is using statistical modeling called bunching test to analyze gerrymandering efforts in swing states. They found that political parties are answering the loss of a congressional seat in prior elections with stepped-up gerrymandering to retake the seat in the future. Examination of election cycles from 1970 to 2010 suggests that whichever party controls the redistricting process in the state legislature can gerrymander the party to an 11 percentage point increase in its probability of winning a U.S. House race in the next election. Other trends include more severe gerrymandering to create longer-lasting control and a 15% higher likelihood of racial gerrymandering by conservative legislatures. In a statement about the research, Professor A.J. Shenoy said, "Our findings suggest that parties seek control of redistricting in places where the electorate is turning against them, which in some ways is more concerning because it indicates that redistricting is being used to actively thwart the popular will." Links to articles and groups taking action are at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. Granny D said, "Democracy is not something we have, it's something we do." For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
On the next Deep Threes, Norwegian guitarist Geir Stunstall dives into his instrument collection to produce an album of underwater music, and we'll hear the results. Plus tracks from Africane 808, Floating Points, Edgar Meyer, and Umanzuki. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. Our things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby are lies. Mercy, mercy, mercy. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more be you from man? Can't you stand?
here is this week's environmental news from WGXC. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more about these stories and others. And Roger Hannigan-Gilson is reporting for the Times Union that a green slick of toxic bacteria has formed on a large section of the Wallkill River in Ulster County over the past several days. Commonly referred to as algae blooms, these slicks actually consist of a toxic form of cyanobacteria, which can be harmful to humans and deadly to dogs. The Department of Environmental Conservation received 9 reports of the toxic bloom during the past week on a section of the Wallkill from the village of New Paltz to Sturgeon Pool in Rifton. There's been an additional report of cyanobacteria in the Wallkill tributary Roundout Creek in Rosendale, suggesting the slick might be spreading to the city of Kingston. But according to Dan Shapley, the co-director of science and patrol for the environmental group Riverkeeper, the size of the slick is far greater. Shapley said the slick extends more than 14 miles from the community gardens in New Paltz to Creek Locks in Rosendale, where the Wallkill meets the Roundout. Cyanobacteria can release toxins that can cause irritation and a burning sensation when touching human skin. Ingesting or breathing in droplets of water with these toxins can lead to illness, and some people experience allergic reactions and breathing difficulties when exposed, according to the Department of Environmental Conservation. The slicks can be much more harmful to dogs, resulting in stumbling, difficulty breathing, elevated heart rate, seizures, convulsions, and paralysis. Dogs occasionally die from exposure, according to Shapley. Cyanobacteria develops in water bodies when two distinct conditions exist: high levels of nitrogen and phosphorus, both of which are found in fertilizer, and warm, still water. This is not the first time the slicks have struck the Wallkill. Blooms have been reported near New Paltz dating back to 2015, according to the DEC. A bloom in 2016 affected 30 miles of the river from Montgomery to Orange County to Rosendale and lasted for more than 50 days. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Lauren Harkowick is reporting in the Times Union. The Cary Institute, a local nonprofit environmental organization, has asked Congress for a hearing on why the government's current practices for limiting invasive pests are not working. Invasive pests like the emerald ash borer and Asian longhorned beetle pose irreversible threats to the state's forest ecosystems by targeting native trees and, in some cases, threatening to wipe them out for good. According to the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, based in Millbrook, Dutchess County, the pests that primarily enter the country through packaging used in international trade is, and I quote, one of the most severe and urgent threats facing U.S. trees, end quote. In July, the Institute delivered a petition with more than 1,700 signatures to the U.S. House and Senate Agriculture Committees requesting a congressional hearing on invasive forest pests. Cary's Dr. Gary Lovett said last week that he wants Congress to investigate what is currently being done and why government agencies' current practices for keeping invasive pests out are not working. Asked why he thinks current practices are not working, Lovett said the government is not being firm enough in its regulatory standards for international trade. International trade is how most invasive pests get into the country, often through wooden packaging, such as wood pallets. Pests like emerald ash borer and hemlock woolly adelgid could dramatically change the forest landscape of the Northeast, and New York is the hardest hit in the country. Emerging major concerns, Lovett said, are the spotted lanternfly, which attacks grapes and apples, and the Asian longhorn beetle, which attacks maples. Read the full story in the Times Union. Clarence Fanto in the Berkshire Eagle reports on how the current drought will affect the fall foliage. The experts asked say the colorful leaves this year could be delayed and less vibrant. In Pittsfield, Massachusetts, for instance, only 0.80 inches of rain have fallen so far this month, far short of the 3-inch long-term average for the first 24 days of August. The U.S. Drought Monitor has much of the Hudson Valley in a moderate or severe drought. AccuWeather meteorologist Tom Kind said, and I quote, "It's not going to be a great fall for observing leaf colors. You need beneficial rain, you don't want it really hot, but we've struck out on those," end quote. Fall foliage expert Jim Salge at Yankee Magazine was more optimistic. Salt said, and I quote, "With the warmer weather and the drought, we're expecting a shorter than usual season. That's a guarantee, and plenty of red colors more likely than not. Reds are beautiful. Some of our best foliage years have been abnormally dry years," end quote. But if drought continues, leaves are likely to turn brown prematurely and dry out. Karen Lombard, Director of Stewardship and Restoration for Massachusetts at the Nature Conservancy, said, and I quote, "Species such as maples that provide the most brilliant displays are more sensitive to drought than other species," end quote. And you can read the full story in the Berkshire Eagle. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. You can visit our website for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you are there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Now we are joined by our friend Henry the Hudson Whale for some Hudson River stories from the past week. How have you been doing, Henry? All right, well, the U.S. Geological Survey reports temperatures this week in the Hudson River near Albany are between 78 and 80 degrees. ABC News reports that the City Club of New York and Tom Fox, a representative of the club who serves on the Hudson River Park Advisory Council, plan to sue Con Edison for alleged, quote, ongoing violations, unquote, of the Federal Clean Water Act. They allege that Con Ed is dumping water used to cool a power station off of Hudson River Park's Pier 98 in New York City into the river at, quote, dangerously high temperatures, unquote, and are also dumping wastewater containing, quote, toxic pollutants, unquote, such as chloroform, into the estuary sanctuary in violation of its state permit. Con Ed spokesperson said the company is, quote, in compliance with our permit for both water temperature and discharge of chemicals at Pier 98, unquote. Read more about this story at the ABC News website. Post Star reports that the lower levels of the Hudson River west of the Glens Falls, South Glen Falls Route 9 bridge have exposed riverbanks, drainage pipes, the underside of a swimming dock, and old mid-river piers once used when logs were moved downstream by force of the current. The low levels of the river are not from the drought, but a summer drawdown to allow for routine dam maintenance. Because of the up to 8-foot reduction in water levels, there is no summer swimming at municipal beaches in Glens Falls and South Glens Falls, and regular water levels won't return until September. Read more about this story in the Post Star. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that a 2-foot-long sea lamprey was fished out of the Hudson River by the Department of Environmental Conservation in June. Lamprey are strange-looking jawless fish that, quote, feed parasitically on larger fish using their round mouth ringed with hooked teeth, unquote, the department said on social media. They are rarely found at the agency's Norrie Point Environmental Center in Stottsburg in Dutchess County, where DEC estuary educator Ben Harris caught one with a cast net. Quote, sea lamprey occurs as amociates in medium-sized streams near the mouths and in areas with clean sand, unquote, the DEC said. Quote, the adult phase is parasitic and typically found only in the big lakes or the ocean, unquote. Sea lampreys attack fish in the Hudson River, not humans. The National Ocean Service calls the lamprey, quote, an efficient killer of lake trout and other bony fishes as its disc-shaped suction cup mouth ringed with sharp, horny teeth, which it latches onto an unfortunate fish, unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And Those are this week's Hudson River stories with our friend Henry the Hudson Whale. See you next week, Henry.
Drinks are on us. What's the skinny man?
Next, we hear from three legendary jazz performers, Peter Brotzman on reeds, Milford Grave on drums, and William Parker on bass. This is Sides C from their 2022 album, Historic Music, Past Tense Future.
Thank you.
From 2022, that was Side C from Historic Music Past Tense Future, the album from saxophonist Peter Brotzman, drummer Milford Graves, and bassist William Parker.
Our love is a lie, and so we begin.